This is 91.3 KUAF, a listener-supported service of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. And this is Ozarks at Large for Monday, July 2nd, 2018. I'm Kyle Kellums. Ahead this hour, conversations about health. First, a health survey of four counties in northwest Arkansas is a partnership between several agencies. And later, Scott Hamilton, gold medal-winning skater, talks to us about his work raising money for cancer research and services and about his upcoming visit to Springdale later this month. In about an hour on NPR's Here and Now, bike shares are booming in the U.S. as more cities adopt new technology like dockless bike sharing, which lets riders leave their bike wherever they want. We'll find out why bike sharing is so popular. That's on Here and Now beginning in just under an hour, right after Ozarks at Large at 1 o'clock. On 91.3. And don't forget, the current season of Opera in the Ozarks continues tonight at Inspiration Point near Eureka Springs. Curtain tonight at 7:30 for the American Opera, The Ballad of Baby Doe. You can find out more at opera.org. It's about 7 minutes after noon. One of the bigger conversations happening across our region has to do with housing affordability and accessibility. Fayetteville Housing Authority Board Member Melissa Terry says housing for low-income residents should be a prominent feature of that discussion. The Housing Authority oversees public housing and Section 8 vouchers in our area. One of the agency's plans is to sell its Willow Heights property to build more housing on its Morgan Manor property. Melissa Terry has been a vocal opponent of that plan and instead has proposed rehabilitating Willow Heights. Some of the ideas for how that could be done are now on display at the Fayetteville Public Library. Melissa Terry sat down with Ozarks at Large's Zuzanna Sitek recently to talk about the exhibit.
So across the street from our studios at the library is a display in the lobby, and it has to do with Willow Heights, which is one of the Housing Authority properties. Can you tell us what people will see when they walk into the library?
Yeah, so the cool thing about being in a university community is that we are surrounded by so much talent. And one of the hubs of local talent when it comes to planning and the combination of planning and architecture is the Jones School of Architecture's Community Design Center. The Community Design Center, with support from a local foundation, was able to conduct a study this semester that really just focused on what's the landscape look like at Willow Heights if we take this as sort of an authenticity anchor of this neighborhood, and like really looked at the possibilities for revitalizing it and reinvesting in it as an infill space. And so they took that on as a design challenge just to explore to what extent that was possible, and what were some kind of rough budget numbers that it would take to accomplish such a thing. And so they started with a site visit to Willow Heights and walked around, got to go inside a couple of units with the director and the maintenance staff and really look at the different types of units that are there. So they got to look at all those kind of different amenities as well as the topography of the space, because if you drive by there, and if anybody does want to drive by there, the physical address is 10 Willow Avenue, and so it's on the southwest slope of Mount Sequoia, and the views are amazing, and it's really beautiful, but its best asset is also kind of its most challenging asset, in that the terrain, without consistent maintenance and good design, lends itself to a troublesome stormwater network that comes through the property. So the Community Design Center not only looked at the built environment and the rehabilitation potentials, but they also looked at the stormwater environment, and they engaged the University of Arkansas Center for Resilience director Marty Matlock, who this is his thing, is engineering and stormwater engineering in particular, to do an assessment of that upper basin. And look at some remediation strategies. And so there was a whole separate presentation on that to the Board of Fayetteville Housing Authority Board of Directors or Commissioners. And that was really exciting because it just shows that this is a solvable problem. So what you see if you're a library patron and you come in right now is, as you come in the foyer of the library, There's a display on your left that has three different models of potential reconfigurations at Willow Heights. And that includes the revitalization of the existing 40 units, as well as the additional infill and new construction of 18 units. So I think it's a really exciting opportunity to just look at what's possible. And not that the models that are at the library are a choice of, like, it's going to be one of these three. It's really just meant to be like an exercise in the elasticity of thinking of, like, oh, we can do some cool things up there. We actually probably should do some cool things up there.
And just to describe kind of how this looks when you walk into the library, you have the 3D models, the three 3D models, and then these banners that really lay out how many units, and these do include market rate units, which I think is another is another way that a lot of public housing authorities have been tackling the issues of affordable housing, is by also providing market rate housing.
Well, and the other thing, that's exactly right, and the other thing that the mixed market rate housing does is at the economic level is that it really provides a little bit of sort of sustainability funding, you know, like given the politics of our current administration and maybe even of administrations to come, and to be fair, of administrations in the past, like it can be fairly volatile what the housing, any housing authority can expect in a fiscal year, depending on which way the wind blows. And so one of the compelling aspects of mixed market rate commingled properties from a public housing point of view is that it does add a little bit more financial security to the reserve fund, because the key is that mixed market rate housing really only works if it's a highly desirable location. The thing with public housing, and this is a national conversation, this is a public policy conversation that's happening all across different bandwidths and different communities, is that there is no equity in anybody in the community being able to drive by where you live, or if you're a kid getting off the school bus, for your classmates to know that you live in public housing. That's not equity. So what that is an emergency services, and so that's fine for what it is. However, the cool thing about the mixed market rate housing scenario is that it also blends the aesthetic of the built environment. So it's not clear, and it shouldn't be, who's living in subsidized spaces and who's living in fully market rate spaces. And that's true community equity. Nobody else needs to know your business like that. So what these kind of design exercises can do are to inform kind of our expectations of what does that look like. You know, I don't think that we know what that looks like because we don't have anything like that around here, but we have the opportunity to set that template and set that benchmark. This is a really good time to be thinking about it and to be looking at it. We're actually right on the verge of getting ready to submit our five-year agency plan. And we have several goals and objectives in the five-year plan that we encourage the community to give us feedback on. And one of the objectives is to implement measures to deconcentrate poverty by bringing higher-income public housing households into lower-income developments. So I'm reading that straight from our draft. And so that really anchors this conversation. If we truly do have an objective to implement measures to deconcentrate poverty, then we need to keep people in place. We need to keep our walkability scores really high and to do our mixed market rate housing in a highly desirable location so that blend is not rhetorical, it's actual.
Can you elaborate a little bit on that five-year plan, sort of what your role as the board is and the role of the actual staff at the Housing Authority?
So it's a requirement of HUD to submit a five-year plan so that they can kind of see your forecast of what you're looking at, what are your issues. And so the plan that we have right now, the draft, includes the certifications that we need, our anticipated work items, like I said, these goals and objectives. It also includes a draft budget for where we proposed, and this is the director. This is not a function of the board. The board's function is to lead the conversation in the goals and objectives, sort of higher level conversations, and then the executive director's work is to implement those goals and objectives, and that includes laying out the budget that she sees executable and manageable within the goals and objectives framework. And that includes like clarifying where we are in Willow Heights, what our options are there. Also, we need to have a discussion about like what's going on at Lewis Plaza over by Ramey Junior High and what are the options and opportunity costs over there as well. So this is, the timing is really good because it gives us a chance to have a, 50,000 foot view conversation about like the whole big picture of the Housing Authority and our programs in Fayetteville.
So when people go to the library over the next few days and they see this exhibit, what kind of thoughts are you hoping they walk away with?
One of my favorite things about this design study is not just that it shows us that it's possible and that it's practical and that it's a really kind of Ozarky thing to do to fix what you have. So let's fix what we have and then let's make the things around it even better so that it lifts the entire neighborhood. And so one of the cool things about the three design models that are out there is that they show these different potential configurations, but what they really show is the possibility of how public housing property can be a prototype of how we actually implement and execute the city's number one 2030 goal, which is a revitalization and an infill. And so how does that apply to the super low income in our community? And if it doesn't apply to the super low income, then it shouldn't apply to any of us. And so the thing that I would hope that people would take away is just, dang, there's some really cool opportunities up there. And it may not look like one of these three models, the final manifestation of what a revitalization design project would look like up there, because we'd have to issue an RFQ and like the request for proposals and all that stuff. But just to kind of realize that it's possible is pretty powerful.
Well, thanks for stopping by our studio.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
That was Fayetteville Housing Authority Board Member Melissa Terry speaking with Ozarks at Large's Zuzanna Sitek about the Willow Heights Rehabilitation Display in the library lobby, which will remain up through July 10th. The Housing Authority holds its special meeting to vote on its five-year plan, which includes the future of Willow Heights, Monday night, a week from tonight, July 9th at 6:30 p.m. That meeting is in room 326 at Fayetteville's City Hall. This is Ozarks at Large.
91.3 is supported by Butterfield Trail Village, a premier Northwest Arkansas retirement community catering to active lifestyles and resident well-being. Offering a variety of amenities and living options from apartments to village homes, plus on-site fitness facilities. ButterfieldTrailVillage.org for more.
The Northwest Arkansas Naturals baseball team welcomes the Corpus Christi Hooks this week at Arvest Ballpark in Springdale. Tickets, game times, promotion calendar, and stats available online at nwanaturals.com. Ahead on this Monday edition of Ozarks, Scott Hamilton is a busy man and has been since he earned gold at the 1984 Winter Olympics. He is a philanthropist, an author, and television commentator, and he'll be in Springdale later this month for the Skate to Eliminate Cancer Northwest Arkansas event at the Jones Center. In about 8 minutes, he'll talk to us about his work with the Scott Hamilton Cares Foundation, his new book, and about that gold medal.
I understand the nature of my life is that it's temporary, and I need to get some things done before I'm no longer here. And a part of that is letting go of the past and finding a place for it, which just happened to be in a brown paper bag in my underwear drawer.
Scott Hamilton is coming to Northwest Arkansas in 2 weeks, and in about 8 minutes, he'll be on Ozarks at Large. And noted chef, author, and activist Tony Tipton Martin is also coming to our area. The recipient of the 2016 James Beard Book Award and former guest judge on Top Chef is scheduled to be at Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art Friday night, July 27th. Her talk will begin at 7 that night. Her book, The Jemima Code, Two Centuries of African-American Cookbooks, celebrates the legacy of African-American cooks and their work. She'll sign copies of her book after her talk on the 27th. You can find out more at crystalbridges.org. And then Saturday, this Saturday, July 7th, Stephen Cook, who you hear most Mondays, including later this hour, hosting our Arkansongs feature, will discuss his book, Louis Jordan, Son of Arkansas, Father of R&B. This takes place at the Fayetteville Public Library. He'll, too, sign copies of his book after his talk. His appearance Saturday at the Fayetteville Public Library begins at 2. You can learn more at faylib.org.
Support for KUAF comes from contributing listeners and from KUAF's sustaining members. Monthly sustainers of KUAF form a strong foundation, providing reliable and steady support for the programs, salaries, technology, and more that's needed to make this public radio station strong. Thank you to the more than 1,000 sustaining members of 91.3. We appreciate your support.
This is Ozarks at Large for Monday, July 2nd, 2018. A comprehensive Northwest Arkansas four-county community health survey is underway. As Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich reports, the survey project is a collaboration of public health agencies and nonprofit medical institutions seeking guidance from diverse residents.
Dr. Lisa Lowe, MD, Medical Director of Community Health for Mercy Northwest Arkansas, is a key member of the survey team.
In our hospital, we have to do a community health needs assessment every 3 years. All nonprofit hospitals have to do that.
In January, Mercy partnered with Washington Regional Medical Center, Arkansas Department of Health, County Public Health Units, Community Clinic, NWA, Ozark Guidance, Madison County Health Coalition, UAMS Northwest, Arkansas Coalition of Marshallese, and the HARC Center, which has posted the survey online at harcnwa.com. The last time a survey was taken, Lowe says, was in 2004, sponsored by Madison County Health Coalition.
Well, that was, you know, sort of pre-internet, really, in a way. I mean, there was internet then, but it wasn't really electronic. It was people were interview participants, I think, at some of the clinics and maybe at some of the county health fairs, and they found that access to health care and cost of care was kind of everyone's biggest priority.
This current survey, she says, went through 10 drafts before it was placed online at harcnwa.com in May. It will remain there through mid-September. The HARC at the Center for Collaborative Care was developed in response to research conducted by Mercy NWA in 2015, revealing that mental and physical health care services in Northwest Arkansas are program-rich but systems poor. Providers, which have been working to build connectivity, seek health care needs insight from four county residents through the current survey.
But with a special emphasis on vulnerable populations, so Hispanic and Marshallese populations, there is going to be a Marshallese translation of this survey. The Arkansas Coalition of Marshallese is working on that right now, and we're hoping to get that uploaded in a week or two. But right now, there's an English and Spanish version.
More than a half million people occupy Northwest Arkansas, with more than 50,000 individuals moving here since the 2010 census. More than one-third of Rogers and Springdale residents are Hispanic, and as many as 20,000 Marshallese have legally migrated to the region. Medical experts say both populations struggle with obesity, diabetes, and hypertension. Islanders with tuberculosis and thyroid tumors linked to U.S. nuclear weapons testing on the Marshall Islands. As a consequence, Dr. Lowe seeks diverse residents to respond to the survey.
So we're aiming for it to be open through the summer, and it kind of depends, you know, how many responses we have. So far we have about 350 responses, but most of those people are more educated, they're mostly white, they're mostly, and they're actually mostly from Benton County right now. So our goal is several thousand people that would reflect the demographics of the region, you know, and throughout the four-county area.
The anonymous 25-question survey requires no registration and takes 10 minutes to complete. Paper copies are available at county health units in Carroll, Madison, Benton, and Washington counties.
Well, I think it's pretty exciting that this is the first time that the main health care organizations have come together to do something like this. A lot of communities have health collaboratives and have done sort of community-wide surveys and and needs assessments and things, but we haven't really done that here yet. So we're pretty excited that we actually, you know, of course, knew a lot of the people that we're collaborating with already, but it's a pretty exciting project, I think, to help us all to sort of get on the same page.
The HarkNWA.com online survey can be followed on Facebook at NWA Community Health Survey 2018. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
Links to our stories and interviews, including the story you just heard, can be found online at OzarksAtLarge.com. And when you're unable to hear our show, when it's on 91.3 at noon and 7, you can still have access to Ozarks at Large available through our free podcast. The Ozarks at Large podcast available through services like iTunes, Stitcher, and Apple TV. You can also hear past shows through OzarksAtLarge.com and the most recent editions of Ozarks at Large also available through our free KUAF app. This is Ozarks at Large. Scott Hamilton is one of the most recognizable figure skaters in history. He won gold at the 1984 Olympics. He has 4 world and 4 U.S. championships as well. He has also been a skater and skating commentator at 3 major television networks. He is the founder of the Scott Hamilton Cares Foundation. CARES stands for Cancer Alliance for Research, Education, and Survivorship. He's the author of several books, including his latest, Finish First, Winning Changes Everything. And he'll be at the Jones Center on July 14th in Springdale for the Skate to Eliminate Cancer Northwest Arkansas event. And he's with me now on the phone. Scott Hamilton, thank you so much for your time.
Oh, well, thank you for having me on. This will be fun to talk about all kinds of things going on.
You bet. I want to ask you a few questions about your new book. But first, let's talk about the event at the Jones Center that will take place July 14th. You'll be at the ice rink. You're familiar with ice rinks. What do you do when you come to an event like Skate to Eliminate Cancer Northwest Arkansas?
Well, you know, anytime we host a Skate to Eliminate Cancer, it's our national fundraising entity where we go into different cities. And we either host a skating exhibition, show type of thing, and or an on-ice kind of 10K where everybody can come out and skate in honor of, you know, those they love that have been, you know, either through cancer or those that have lost their battles with cancer. And so it's basically a peer-to-peer fundraising program where, you know, we partner with a skating club or a rink or a city, and we host these events to raise money for cancer research and immunotherapy and targeted therapy. So we're very specific about the research that we fund.
You know, not everyone who grew up in Arkansas had access to skates and ice. We're a warm weather place. You don't have to be someone who's comfortable on skates to participate in an event like this.
Oh, of course not. It's really an open hand. Like everything else I do, it's done with very open hand. And, you know, anybody that wants to participate can come, support the skaters, can come watch the skaters skate, can participate in Skate to Eliminate Cancer in any way they possibly want to. You know, it's, again, you know, with a lot of our skaters that, you know, are out there blowing up their email lists and their contact lists to raise money. You know, the really cool thing about Skate to Eliminate is, yes, we are raising money for the Scott Hamilton Cares Foundation, but even bigger than that, we are raising money for a local charity, and, you know, a big portion of the proceeds stay in the community themselves. So we really are, you know, good citizens. We're trying to do a good thing for, you know, people that are doing the right work in our host cities. And we're really excited about, you know, everything that we're doing.
What does training for a competition have in common with guiding a foundation? Are there things that are similar?
Well, yeah. I mean, there's showing up every day,
right.
You know. You know, there's all that. And there's, you know, hope for a result, you know. And anytime you're training for a competition or doing anything like that, you know, you're training for a specific result, no matter what that is. You know, it's like, you know, I talk about my book, Finish First, and, you know, Finish First is an aspiration, right? Finish First is something we all want to experience in our lives, you know, that we won something or we accomplished something. But you know, for me, a finish first moment was, you know, I went to Lake Placid Olympics in 1980 hoping to come in eighth, and I came in fifth. So, you know, there's all kinds of ways of, you know, really just setting goals and surpassing them. And a lot of that is the same with CARES. And, you know, we have a long history of doing some really wonderful things in the cancer community. And ultimately, our goals are lofty. We want to replace the status quo of cancer treatment with a new form of treatment, which is immunotherapy and targeted therapies, which basically go after the cancer and leave the patient alone. You know, it's with where science is and with where the understanding of, you know, the cancer being a cell that needs to be recognized and defeated, you know, it's been proven through CAR T and other, you know, therapies like it, that if you teach your body and your immune system how to recognize the cancer as a mutant cell, it's like any other mutant cell that's in our body. Your body, you know, our immune system recognizes it and then decides it's going to eradicate it. And it's a pretty spectacular thing that, you know, that's where the science in cancer is headed. The treatment options are headed in that direction. And we want to make sure that we get as much financial resources to the hands of those research scientists as possible.
I'm talking with Scott Hamilton, who's the founder. He's the founder of the Scott Hamilton Cares Foundation, of course, gold medal winning skater and an author. Let's talk about your most recent book, Finish First, Winning Changes Everything. And I want to read something that you write early in that book. You say, you wrote, "To me, winning is not about holding a gold medal, losing the 20 pounds, getting a promotion, or seeing my name on a plaque." Then you write, "In fact, I won a gold medal in 1984, and it lived in a brown paper bag in my underwear drawer for years." Really?
You would bring that up, yeah.
Really?
It was, you know, I didn't understand at the time, but it almost like, you know, I guess it was just a set of divine circumstances that kind of led me to do that. And one of them was one of the first things that happened to me after I came back from the Olympics in 1984 was I met with the governor of Colorado, and he just sat me down and he said, "Look, you seem to be a nice person, and my wife met you, you know, and I just want to talk to you." And it was like, I thought it was a PR thing. It wasn't. It was just him and me in his office. And it was a really, you know, something very generous and something I'll never forget. He said, "I just want to talk to you about the hometown hero syndrome. And that is, you know, the quarterback who throws the bomb at the end of the game to win the state championship and then is carried off the field on everybody's shoulders. They, you know, there is that thing where, you know, at times those people feel the rest of their life should be that way." Mm. And it's not. And I was just like, wow, this is mind-blowing. And so I just, there was something about the medal that I realized that if I was in worship of this idol, this medal, that it would prevent me from moving forward, and it would just kind of root me in something that happened in the past. So, you know, I want to keep looking forward. There's things that, you know, I understand the nature of my life is that it's temporary, and you know, I need to get some things done before I'm no longer here. And a part of that is letting go of the past and finding a place for it, which just happened to be in a brown paper bag in my underwear drawer.
you explain in this latest book that winning can be something, you know, far less headline grabbing than, say, winning a political election or winning a gold medal or earning $1 million.
Right. Well, I mean, success for every individual is theirs. It's unique. It's it comes out of their skill set, you know, which can be turned into a purpose, which can be turned into, you know, leading a life of extraordinary quality. You know, it just comes down to, here we are. Let's take an accounting of what we like, what we're drawn to, what we're good at naturally, what we enjoy doing, and really just going after that. You know, I don't know. I was really fortunate that I found skating early in my life because I had a childhood illness, and I had no choice but to be a skater because it was the only thing that worked in giving me my health back. But at the same time, you know, I see people that, you know, that, you know, they have these sensitivities, these abilities, these, you know, kind of identities that need to be, you know, sort of elaborated on. You know, again, you know, I firmly believe that every single person is the only one that ever existed in the history of the world. Why not take that identity and make something, make the most out of it, right? So whatever that is, you know, and I do want to encourage people, and I want to, show them the path and the way to being able to realize the best days of their lives. And that's just through, you know, what I learned going from a serial, dedicated underachiever to being able to experience some pretty amazing things.
Finally, what role can failure play in ultimate success?
Well, failure is really an interesting thing because most people are debilitated, scarred, or destroyed by failure. And for me, I honestly feel like failure is basically information. It doesn't hold anything more than feedback. And so in that, you know, I really feel like if we can allow people to understand failure for what it is, and that's just information and feedback, then we're probably going to be okay. You know, I think anytime we get into a situation of looking at failure as debilitating or as something that needs to be avoided at all costs, you know, we're never going to get that feedback that we need in order to live our best lives. So for me, it's like, you know, I suffered humiliation and failure on so many levels, and you know, I learned from it. You know, it's just, and it's a process. It's not just, oh, yeah, okay, the stove, I'm done. No, you're going to put your hand on the stove a lot. And it just comes down to how do you leverage those experiences and that feedback into kind of what's next and what's best.
And I guess, I mean, it's how you define what is a failure, because if you're trying to learn a specific jump for a skating competition, you're not going to nail it probably the first time.
No, you're going to fall a lot. You know, and for me, it's like, I learned that, you know, in writing the book, I had to figure out, you know, okay, well, how can I better illustrate this? And so I kind of did the math, you know, it's like I wasn't keeping like a clicker count of every single time I fell, you know, but I figured, you know, over under, you know, kind of from the time I started till the end, okay, I probably fell X amount of times, then I mean, this many times. Okay, so on the low end, and that's the low end, I've fallen 41,600 times.
That's a lot, yeah.
But I've gotten up 41,600 times. And you know, when I talk about, you know, coming back from cancer or any of the other multitude of, you know, kind of what I call my unique hobby of collecting life-threatening illness, when I have to think about the getting up, and, yeah, I got up a lot. I got up every time, and I think that helped me build a muscle in my psyche that allowed me to kind of say, okay, I got knocked down. Let's just get up and face what's next. So, you know, there's so much about being knocked down, being criticized, the failure, all those pain points that come with a pursuit of anything that people go, I don't really want to feel that. I don't want to live with that memory. And the more I can really just encourage people to understand that it's part of the process, and without it, I mean, you know, any goal, or anything that we do, you know, really has little meaning if there's no risk involved. You know, it's just sort of like, oh, okay, we'll get up tomorrow. That's good. But it, to me, I also think that's a win. All right. Getting out of bed in the morning is a win.
Scott Hamilton is a gold medal winner, philanthropist, and author. His most recent book is Finish First, Winning Changes Everything. He's also the founder of the Scott Hamilton Cares Foundation. He'll be at the Jones Center in Springdale July 14th for the Skate to Eliminate Cancer Northwest Arkansas event. We have a link about much more information regarding that specific event at ozarksatlarge.com. You can find out much more about Scott and his work at scotthamilton.com. One last question. Was that governor in Colorado that sat you down? Was that Richard Lamb?
It was, yes.
Do you stay at all in contact with him? Because what a great message for him to give you when you were so young.
You know, I haven't seen him. I honestly don't even know where he is. It's just, you know, when you have moments like that and they are truly powerful and they kind of allow you to course correct or put yourself in a position to be more legit to who you are, I mean, you hang on to those things. And I talk about that a lot. You know, I talk about how when I came back from the Olympics, you know, I thought I was all that in a bag of chips, as they say in Canada. You know, I just thought that. And the first two things that happened to me were really profound, and I thank the Lord, you know, for that. And that was the meeting with Governor Lamb, which I thought was a PR thing, and it wasn't. It was just him giving me, you know, some really sage advice. And then, you know, the other part of it was, you know, I couldn't afford any kind of health care, so my orthopedic surgeon, who donated his services to me, you know, throughout my pursuit of the Olympics, asked if I would give a speech, you know, for the Paralympics group when they came back from Sarajevo and the Paralympics. I said, of course, and I went in there thinking that I was all that, and look, aren't they blessed to have me doing this speech? And then I saw people that were braver, more resilient, and more spectacular than I could have ever imagined being, you know, and I was so inspired by them and their stories that I just felt like a loser. I didn't really feel like I was much anymore. So those two events put everything that I had experienced into a really appropriate and correct category, right? Or you know, identity, and it allowed me to be able to move forward in a way that I never thought possible.
Skater, gold medal winner, philanthropist, and author Scott Hamilton talked with us last week. He will be at the Jones Center in Springdale July 14th for the Skate to Eliminate Cancer Northwest Arkansas event. And we do have links about much more information regarding that event at OzarksAtLarge.com.
The historic Mount Sequoia Center, a newly formed nonprofit, offers rental space of all sizes for public and private events, plus cottages and hall lodging for overnight stays or weekend retreats. Located on 32 acres overlooking the heart of downtown Fayetteville, 443-4531 or mountsequoia.org for more. The July 4th Fireworks Spectacular, featuring Sona, Symphony of Northwest Arkansas, is Wednesday, July 4th at the Walmart Amp in Rogers. Red, white, and blue dress is encouraged for this patriotic concert. Fireworks and summer activities, including face painting, sliced watermelon, games, and more will be available. Public family festivities begin at 5 p.m., concert at 7:30, and fireworks at 9:15. AmpTickets.com for more.
It is Monday, July 2nd, 2018. This is Ozarks at Large. With me, Becca Martin Brown, features editor at the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette. Happy Monday.
Man, you cannot get rid of me this week.
Nope, you're going to be here tomorrow, too.
You're going to be here tomorrow,
you're
going
to have to give us the whole rundown of the 4th of July stuff.
Yep. So today, we're going to do a bunch of it.
Okay.
Hang on to your hats. If you know Paul Haas, who's the music director of the Symphony of Northwest Arkansas, he's a little nuts in a really good way.
Very ambitious.
The first concert they did, his encore was the Razorback fight song.
Yeah.
I love this man, who is now living in upstate New York, back to the landing, raising chickens and planting nut trees. And yeah, but he'll be in town for the concert at the Arkansas Music Pavilion on the 4th of July.
With Sona.
And he says, you know, it's harder to program that concert than you'd think.
I get that, especially since you're doing it every year.
Yeah. He said, after you get past the Star Spangled Banner and the Stars and Stripes, then you can do lots of stuff. So he's going to include some film scores and some old Americana and throw in a few things that nobody expects, like a fiddle tune arranged for the entire orchestra.
All right.
He says, as always with me, you never quite know what's coming next.
I like that.
So this thing starts with a family fun festival at 5 o'clock on the 4th of July, which is Wednesday. That happens outside the AMP, and it's free. And it's hosted by the AMP and the City of Rogers. And then the AMP gates open at 6. And then there's music at 7:30. Tickets for that start at $3 for grass seats, go up to $35. And then there's fireworks at the end. And then there's, oh boy, yeah, and then there's a whole ton of stuff. We'll hit the high ones.
Okay.
On Tuesday, which is the 3rd.
Which is tomorrow.
Right.
Yes.
The Bella Vista fireworks have grown up to be the Bella Vista Independence Blues Festival.
Yes, it has, yes.
And they're going to have the Cape Brothers and the Downtown Live Wires. This starts at 5 o'clock below Loch Lomond Dam in Bella Vista, where I'm just going to tell you the truth, it's swampy as all get out. So it will be hot and sticky.
And maybe,
so plan ahead.
Maybe bring some repellent if you're if mosquitoes get
you. Yeah, or eat a lot of garlic today.
Okay.
That works just as well. But there's going to be music, and you can bring lawn chairs and coolers and a picnic and all of that, and then fireworks after that. And it's all free, and you don't have to live in Bella Vista.
Right.
And the line will start early.
Yes, it will.
Then there's fireworks at the Naturals game.
Right.
They play Corpus Christi at 6:35, and then afterward there will be fireworks, which you can see from all around the ballpark in Springdale. Tickets for the baseball game start at 8:50. And then on the 4th of July,
which is Wednesday,
there is a Patriot Parade starting at 9 o'clock in Bella Vista. It's at the Sugar Creek Center, because you can't really parade down the interstate. It would go poorly.
Well, actually, they have signs that say parades are not allowed.
Yeah, right? Well, it would go poorly anyway. So music at 9, entertainment at 9:30, and then the parade at 10 at Sugar Creek Center. Then Eureka Springs is doing all sorts of things, including the Miss Apple Pie Contest, the Mr. Firecracker Contest, which Zeke Taylor has been campaigning hard for, and the Best Dressed Parade Dog, starting at 9 o'clock between the City Auditorium and the Courthouse.
And this is on the 4th.
On the 4th, and then the parade at 10 o'clock.
All right.
And then there's Games Day at Lake Fort Smith State Park, and there's Freedom Festival at City Park in Gentry, and a Freedom Festival at Veterans Memorial Park in Greenwood, and Fourth at the Field, which is at the Naturals Field.
Okay.
But it's a baseball game between two teams from the Mink Collegiate Basketball League.
Basketball league?
Or baseball, sorry.
Okay, I was going to say.
Sorry, I was happy for a second.
Yeah, and you know, these collegiate baseball leagues are wood bat leagues where
I knew he'd know.
College players who are not eligible yet for the baseball draft, but they play in the summer. There's the Cape Cod League. There's the Alaska League. So that's pretty cool.
Okay, well, this is the Joplin, Missouri Outlaws and the Nevada, Missouri Griffins, and they play at 6:30 at Arvest Ballpark. Tickets are $12, and then fireworks after the show.
That is really cool.
And there's a Fourth Fest at First Baptist Church in Centerton and an evening at Orchards Park in Bentonville. You really need to find yesterday's What's Up.
Yes.
Or go online at nwaonline.com/features/what's up, and you can read all of these because they're everywhere. They're everywhere.
And you're not going to make them all.
No, you're not going to make
them. That would be impossible.
But it would be fun to try.
Would it? All right. Becca Martin, and you're going to be back tomorrow with a further rundown, right?
I'm going to be back tomorrow with something completely different.
Oh, okay. Becca Martin Brown, features editor at the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. It's about 11 minutes before 1 o'clock. The first three licensed computer science teachers to graduate from the University of Arkansas UA Teach program are being honored at the annual Arkansas Computer Science Educators Conference today in Arkadelphia. The three graduates will help meet the need of Arkansas high schools now required to teach computer science courses. The Arkansas legislature passed a bill in 2015 requiring all high schools in the state to offer at least one computer science course. The UA Teach program is a partnership between the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences and the College of Education and Health Professions. North Arkansas College, a public two-year institution with three campuses in Harrison, is expanding its Carroll County Center in Berryville. Mickey Summers, the Director of Marketing and Public Relations with North Ark, says the expansion will include new spaces.
Currently, it's on Freeman Street in Bobcat Plaza, and we've occupied a couple of spaces there, but we're expanding into two new spaces that's going to add another 2,000 square feet of space into classrooms.
Established in 1974, North Ark offers associate degrees in arts, science, and general study, transfer and technical degree programs and certificates, customized business and industry training, as well as adult basic education. Summers says the expansion will allow for new academic offerings in Carroll County as well.
Yes, that's right. We're going to be offering network fundamentals. That's actually offered this fall in the current space, but it's a new offering in Carroll County Center. PC repair, A+, and CNA courses are new offerings, too.
The Carroll County Center currently provides adult education classes, college-level courses, bilingual staff, and computer lab access. And the Mid-America Arts Alliance says it is including four area projects in its latest grant awards announced this morning. The MAAA is giving a total of more than $18,000 in grants for artists in six states. The agency is giving the Fayetteville-based Prison Story Project $13,500 to help with tours of the On the Row Theater Project, inspired by the writings of 11 men on death row. Neighbors and Neighborhood, a visual arts project in Bevo-Rama on the banks of the White River, will receive $9,000 for a collection of 12 works depicting life in that unincorporated community. The MAAA also awarded more than $7,000 for a traveling arts experience called Our Front Porch, based in Russellville. And a project called Then and Now will record and create 3D models of 21 historic and cultural sites in northeastern Oklahoma. That project received more than $2,000.
From Little Rock, I'm Stephen Cook with Arkansas Songs. Carlos Bookmiller Shannon was born January 16, 1908, on Cow Mountain in Stone County, Arkansas, and played the five-string banjo. He played with fellow Stone County native Jimmy Driftwood Morris, and it was October 1959 in Timbo when Shannon recorded these banjo solos for Alan Lomax. Buffalo Gals, heard here, dates to American minstrelsy times. Bookmiller Shannon was the only performer recorded during the North Arkansas sessions not born in the 19th century. His version of Down in Arkansas Among the Sticks is heard here. The song was later immortalized on the long-running country music TV show Hee Haw. The origins of Cotton Eye Joe are murky. It's a dance, a song, and may have been a real person. And what does it mean to be cotton-eyed? Performed here by Bookmiller Shannon, the Cotton-Eyed Joe has been used in both black and white dance halls for many decades. Some say the 8th of January was composed to commemorate the War of 1812. Others say the tune may have already been in existence and merely been renamed for the U.S. victory over Britain. Bookmiller Shannon's version is heard here, but the tune has special meaning for Jimmy Driftwood as he took the basic melody and crafted it into the song The Battle of New Orleans. Ironically, the song was a big hit the same year these ancient-sounding field recordings were made. In the dark and tangled hills of the state of Arkansas, Lomax wrote after making his recordings, the approved mode of conduct was nonconformism. Whether this meant a life of train robbing like Jesse James, or simply of reciting songs and bawdy stories. With the help of Jimmy Driftwood, a teacher, and folklorist John Quincy Adams, Lomax also recorded folk performers in Landis and Herpal. Driftwood's father, Neil Morris, gathered players, performed himself, and offered this commentary, courtesy of his own Arkansas father, a music teacher.
Dad said that music had no end, that you could learn all the other guy learned. And after you got that done, they would then something else would crop up. That was the reason why that music advanced. They said that music grew like the grapevine that is never pruned, that each year it put on a little bit more. Any further question?
Carlos Bookmiller Shannon died June 28, 1985. His five-string banjo technique studied and lauded across America. Here in its entirety is Shannon of Stone County with Down in Arkansas Among the Sticks on his five-string banjo. Carlos Bookmiller Shannon with Down in Arkansas Among the Sticks, recorded October 1959 in his native Stone County. It's another song of Arkansas. From Little Rock, I'm Stephen Cook with Arkansongs.
Arkansongs is a production of Experiment Station Studios. Producer is Keith Merks. Arkansongs, since 1998.
The 2018 college baseball season just ended for the Arkansas Razorbacks, but a pair of Razorbacks are not done with their summer yet. Outfielder Dominic Fletcher and left-handed pitcher Matt Cronin will continue to play this summer. They're going to suit up for Team USA Collegiate National Team beginning this week in North Carolina. Fletcher and Cronin make the all-time total of Razorbacks playing for USA Collegiate National Team 16. The Northwest Arkansas Naturals will continue their homestand in Springdale tonight at Arvest Ballpark, taking on Corpus Christi first pitch scheduled for just after 6:30. And it may be a bit early to be talking about college football. However, for the fourth year in a row, it has been announced that the Arkansas Razorback football game against Missouri will be played on the day after Thanksgiving. The 2018 game, which is called the Battle Line Rivalry, will be November 23rd, beginning at 1:30. It will be shown on CBS and played in Columbia, Missouri.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. The Botanical Garden of the Ozarks welcomes terrific Tuesday nights. Now through August, the garden will be open to the public from 5 to 8 p.m. each Tuesday. A variety of programs, including family-friendly summer concerts and educational demonstrations, will be offered. Tuesday nights are free. However, $5 donations are encouraged. bgozarks.org for more.
Charles Messier was a French astronomer and a comet hunter. He's credited with discovering 13 comets. Well, Saturday, Hobbs State Park will host a lecture on Messier, followed by a star party night viewing that will come complete with telescopes. The lecture begins at 8 Saturday night. Night sky viewing will then begin at 9. If you'd like to know more about this free event at Hobbs State Park, you can go to friendsofhobbs.com. And the Robert Mann Gallery is announcing a limited-run pop-up show of photographs by Julie Blackman in Bentonville. The exhibition is titled Midwest Materials, and it will run through the 28th of this month. If you'd like to know more about that, robertmann.com. A listener-supported service of the School of Journalism and Strategic Media at the University of Arkansas, this is 91.3 KUAF, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Garfield. Ozarks at Large, a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums. Thank you for tuning in on this Monday for our show. We'll be back tomorrow at noon and 7 with a brand new edition of Ozarks at Large. And on Wednesday the 4th, we'll continue our annual tradition of listening again to some of our favorite in-studio performances from the first 6 months of the year. That'll be at noon and 7 on the Wednesday, July 4th edition of Ozarks at Large. Have a great rest of your Monday.